The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Time now for the second hour of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Great to be with you and have you along for the ride this morning. As always, every Saturday morning from 6 to 9 right here on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. And we've got some great guests coming up in the course of this hour, but before and the next hour, of course, when we get to congressional candidate Eric Odland, who will join us in studio. Real quick, though, I want to make mention or just clarify something as far as the refunds under the Taxpayer Bill of Rights that we will be getting. Oh, if you haven't gotten it already, I was just double checking on the requirements, and I don't think you had to have paid taxes necessarily, but you have to, according to the various Q&As or what have you, you have to have been a filer. You have to have filed for your taxes in 2021. Just wanted to clarify that as we continue. And as we turn to international affairs, just this week, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, went against the at least reported wishes of the Biden administration and completed a trip to Taiwan, one that has annoyed China, ticked them off, angered them. Choose your adjective. They're not happy about it. But Nancy Pelosi, as Speaker of the House, the third highest ranking individual in America's government, visited Taiwan.
Today, our delegation, which I'm very proud, came to Taiwan to make unequivocally clear we will not abandon our commitment to Taiwan, and we are proud of our enduring friendship.
Now, there were many who were saying, no, she shouldn't go. She shouldn't go to Taiwan. This is dangerous. We should not tick off China, which says there will be consequences if she does this visit. Well, she did the visit, and it's a rare instance where I will give Speaker Pelosi kudos as a frequent critic. But she deserves kudos for actually following through with this visit. And now China is bringing about a number of consequences in terms of economic impacts on Taiwan. For example, they're doing missile tests over the Taiwanese Strait. You've got them cutting off contacts with the United States on issues like military matters and crucial climate cooperation and more. Because the Chinese Communist Party decided to take a very hostile route in response to Pelosi's visit. So what is the perspective of Taiwan right now over this visit, given the fallout? How should we analyze and look at the fallout? Bill Huang is the director general of the Taipei Economic and Cultural Office in Denver. This is essentially their consulate here in Denver, the regional consulate for the Taiwanese government. And he joins me now. Bill, good morning. Welcome, sir.
Good morning, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate the time here on the program. And I want to dive right in and cut to the chase on Pelosi's visit. What is your view and the view of the Taiwanese government on her visit? Was it welcome and appreciated? Or is it something where you're thinking, maybe it's not such a good idea that she came?
I just want to emphasize that for decades, actually, we've been receiving United States congressional delegations, and there have been previous speakers of the House visiting Taiwan before. So all of them have been welcomed and well-received in Taiwan. So Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit is no exception. We welcome her visit, and especially particularly the fact that she went there to emphasize the importance of Taiwan in the global supply chain, and also expressed the U.S. support for Taiwan's vibrant democracy, open market system, and a very free and open society. So that's the purpose of her visit. And I don't think the U.S. should allow any other country to dictate where and when you can visit another country. Just want to emphasize that.
I think that's such an important point. And, of course, the Chinese government wanted to make a big stink because the Communist Party likes to think they run everything around the globe. And so Pelosi says, nah, I'm going to go and do this trip no matter what. Given that, she said, I am fulfilling this and meeting with the leaders of Taiwan in your country, and let me call it your country. What does that visit, given all that, what does that visit signify to the average Taiwanese citizen, and what message do you think that should send to the world?
I think if you notice, there have been various threats from China before her visit. And so Speaker Pelosi still insists that she needs to go. She needed to go, right? And that sends a message to the Taiwanese that, although there have been threats from China, the bond between the U.S. and Taiwan has been solid. And looking forward, I think that visit itself is sending a message to China that you cannot, through your threat and coercion, try to, influence the relations between Taiwan and, the United States and other Western democracies, because in a precarious world situation like today, the cooperation and further consolidation of relations between liberal democracies is even more important.
Again, Bill Huang, our guest, he represents the Taiwanese government here in Denver. That's where his region is based. Joining us here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. So as we look at the situation right now, China is exerting all sorts of pressure as a result. It is banning certain exports from Taiwan into China's mainland. When we look at the consequences to the United States, they're cutting off certain communications and ties in certain areas that some of them seem to me to be superfluous and not so critical. But nevertheless, there are some of these sorts of consequences. How does Taiwan view the reaction from the Chinese Communist Party to this visit and what they're doing, and particularly that exports aspect, because they're going to be doing both the military intimidation with the missile tests that are happening, but also when you talk about the exports into China, they would like to think, okay, we're exerting economic pressure on Taiwan, and that should do something.
Yes, when it comes to Chinese sanctions or punishment, we Taiwanese, we are the experts, because we've been living under threats and coercion of China for more than 73 years. And so we know that from time to time, we are going to make them unhappy and they're going to do something about it. But just like the representative of Taiwan to the United States, Ambassador Li Kim-Xiao said, well, if you have a bully at school, do the parents ask their kids not to go to school? Or you try to deal with it and manage it. And for the economic sanction, they banned over 1,000 products from Taiwan, but strangely, not microchips. So the Chinese do something, they punish you. They try to, ban export from you only when it is convenient. But when they find it not so convenient, they stop doing so. So what I try to emphasize is the Chinese react to strength. They don't react to the reason. So when you're dealing with them, don't be intimidated by their threats and their coercion.
You're hitting on something fascinating, which is there's a limit to what China is willing to do as punishment, as they view it as punishment or retaliation for a particular action.
That's right. That's right. They define, you know, whatever punishment or sanctions they deem necessary. But when it is inconvenient for them, you know, when the world band up together and say that, no, there's a limit to it, you cannot go any further, that's when they back down.
There is a researcher at Harvard named William H. Overholt, and he said in part, he put out a tweet thread, which was it was a lengthy tweet thread, but there are two little elements that I wanted to quote here. He said, quote, Pelosi accomplished much in Taiwan. She stimulated cyber attacks, got thousands of businesses banned from exporting to China, shut down important cross-strait communications tool Weibo, elicited mainland military exercises, and stimulated an imminent temporary blockade. What she didn't do was to strengthen Taiwan or U.S. support for Taiwan in any way. Trump, Pompeo, and Biden already pushed that support to a point that jeopardized the 1979 understanding, which is the foundation of Taiwan's enjoyment of peace, prosperity, and democracy. The message here from this researcher at Harvard and author of a number of books is, oh, Pelosi actually made things worse by doing her visit to Taiwan. It sounds like your view and the view of the Taiwanese government, Bill Huang, is quite the opposite.
Well, I don't know about this Harvard researcher, but I dare say that he doesn't know the Chinese. Or maybe he has so much interactions with the Chinese that he got influenced somehow. That, frankly, that's the Chinese logic. They ask you to agree to something, some kind of communique or principle that was, you know, antiquated. And then from there, they say everything you do that they feel not happy about is against this principle or that communique. But we are living in the 21st century, so we should look forward and look at fact. Look at the way the Chinese are threatening their neighbors and domestically suppressing their religion and the minorities, like the ethnic cleansing in Xinjiang. We cannot turn a blind eye to those and say that we have to maintain a peaceful relation with the Chinese so that we turn a blind eye to whatever evil doings they are conducting. That is just not right. Mm. And if possible, I may want to talk to that researcher and, you know, maybe give him a lesson.
Just a few minutes left with our guest, Bill Huang, who's the director general of the Taipei Economic and Cultural Office in Denver, which is essentially equivalent to a regional consulate for the Taiwanese government. And look, one of the concerns that I think this researcher is expressing and others are as well is the sentiment that what you're seeing right now with the military drills and other things that the Chinese Communist Party is initiating is an escalation of military tensions, which could indicate that there is an increased possibility or prospect for an invasion of Taiwan, which we know the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping, would like to do at some point. There's been a lot of talk, and we've discussed this before, Bill, about the impact of Russia's invasion of Ukraine and how difficult of a time they've had that may be dissuading China from taking that step. But do you think that the visit from Pelosi in any way might quicken the timeline or put Taiwan at greater risk of invasion than it otherwise would have been?
Well, I'm not Chinese. I cannot tell you, you know, what timeline they have in mind. I only say that the Chinese are extremely agitated because this is a critical time for them. As you know, coming into October, they are going to have the 20th convention of the Chinese Communist Party. In a sense, Xi Jinping is going to further consolidate his power. He will not have any term limit. And all the powers is going to centralize on this one person. So this is a critical time. And lots and lots of domestic pressure around so that they have to, you know, show to their people that, you know, they can handle the situation and really show that they you know, they react to, you know, Nancy Pelosi's visits with strength. But, you know, when it comes to military invasion, I think they learned quite a lesson from the situation in Ukraine. to the extent that maybe they have to think twice about it, because just one fact, you know, Taiwan is not as unprepared as Ukrainians. We have been preparing for this for over 70 years. And another fact is the Taiwan Strait is not the British Channel. And remember how much, you know, mobilization you have to come up with to, you know, for the allies to really, to you know, land on the Normandy. And but Taiwan Strait is actually five times wider than the British Channel. So, you know, in modern day warfare, you know, an amphibious attack against Taiwan, it requires lots of mobilization. And, you know, you cannot guarantee the success of it because you never know what's going to happen when, you know, Taiwan also has counterattack capabilities. So, again, I cannot predict what the Chinese will do, but I can only say that the Taiwanese, we Taiwanese are preparing for it. And then, you know, and if, well, with, you know, the assistance of, you know, like-minded countries, I think that we can hold them out. Yeah.
Real quickly, Bill Huang, representative of the Taiwanese government here in Denver, when we Americans look at China and Taiwan, we tend to not understand the relationship between the United States and Taiwan and how crucial that is vis-a-vis China and Taiwan. Can you briefly talk a little bit about the importance of any ties that we have between the United States and Taiwan, and maybe just a brief nod to what China views Taiwan as historically and where that may be wrong?
The Chinese claim that, you know, Taiwan is part of them. But in actual fact, there hasn't been one day that the Chinese Communist Party has exerted whatever form of rule over the island of Taiwan. So, you know, the claim is really very strange and very ridiculous. And as for the relations between Taiwan and the United States, just one fact, when Speaker Pelosi visited Taiwan, he actually met with several of the big bosses of Taiwan's ICT industry, including the, you know, the CEO of Taiwan Semiconductor Company, TSMC. I just want to emphasize the fact that Taiwan accounts for 92% of the world's most advanced chips and almost 60% of the world's microchips altogether. And really, I don't envisage in 5 or 10 years you can find a replacement for that. And if there is a situation in Taiwan, I think the whole world, not just the United States or Europe, but also China will suffer. So, you know, the scenario of a Chinese invasion of Taiwan, I think is a scenario least expected and least anticipated by the whole world, because nobody wants to, you know, us to get into that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. So I want to emphasize that we want peace. We Taiwanese want peace, but we want peace with dignity.
Yeah.
You know, we do not want peace just because we want peace and we need to count out to someone else.
Well, I know that the Taiwanese people love your freedom, love your independence, love. And that's all you know is you understand what it's like to run your own country, and you're a democracy, you're a free market type of economy. And those are things that you don't want to just say, we'll just subsume all of that to China. You certainly look at Hong Kong as a prime example of what that could mean for the Taiwanese people. But I think you hit on something very crucial here, Bill Huang, and that is that the Chinese didn't include microchips in their bans of their export bans from Taiwan into China. And that's very telling about what you just said in terms of the hesitation of the international community and China vis-a-vis any sort of invasion. And that's a very pointed and important point, I think. Bill Huang, again, Director General of the Taipei Economic and Cultural Office. Thank you so much for taking your time this morning. You are an excellent representative of your people. I look forward to more conversations with you down the line, and we're grateful for your insights.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Once again, Bill Huang with the Taiwanese government and their Taipei Economic and Cultural Office joining us here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. We're going to take a break. On the other side, Riley Gaines will join us. NCAA swimmer extraordinaire. Keep it right here. News Talk 710 KNUS.
I have gathered here before me the world's deadliest assassins, and yet each of you has failed to kick Jimmy Sangenberger off of the air. That makes me angry, people. And when Dr. Evil gets angry, Mr. Bigglesworth gets upset. And when Mr. Bigglesworth gets upset, people die! I'm going to get you, Jimmy Sangenberger, you and all your conservative friends. It's frickin' freezing in here, Mr. Bigglesworth. Where's our government-allocated heat ration?
Grooving back on the Jimmy Singenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. Yes, indeed, Dr. Evil has failed to kick me off the air, and he just will never succeed. Good to be with you, as always. What a powerful conversation with Bill Huang of the Taipei Economic and Cultural Office, representing the Taiwanese government here in Denver. He minced no words. It was powerful. And underscored how significant it really is for American government officials like Speaker Nancy Pelosi to show up and show support for the Taiwanese people. And he's like, yeah, what China is doing is nothing new for us. It doesn't concern us more. We're glad that Pelosi completed her visit. That's encouraging to hear. An important message to hear as we continue on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. Let's shift gears, because women have been making advancements in a variety of areas in the last several decades, in part due to Title IX, which protects against discrimination based on sex, or at least that's how it has been until the Biden administration has been moving forward with changes to Title IX. We will get to that in a moment. But Title IX is certainly significant in terms of women's sports and the advancement of women's opportunities and girls' opportunities in sports. And that seems to be being undermined now with changes in how sports are operating. With, you look at transgender athletes like Leah Thomas, who is now the University of Pennsylvania's nominee for the NCAA's Woman of the Year. Really? Let's talk about this. Let's talk about the significance of Title IX, what it means, its implications, and more. And what's happening with Riley Gaines. She is another nominee for NCAA's Woman of the Year. Just graduated from the University of Kentucky, which has nominated her. She has been an all-American swimmer for the NCAA. Done incredible work in that regard. Tremendous athlete, and now is speaking out on this important issue. Good morning, Riley, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate it. I just want to sort of set the table with you. Where are we at right now in our society where we've been making these advancements for women in sports and other avenues, and then here you have that seemingly being undermined by male-to-female transgender athletes like Leah Thomas coming in, winning, and getting, like, there are so many other biological women at University of Pennsylvania, for example, who could, I would say, should have been nominated for NCAA's Woman of the Year. But alas, this is what they do.
Right. Where we're at right now is completely upside down. It seems like all sanity has been lost. The past, 3 months or whatever it's been since March, I guess it's August now, so longer than 3 months, it seems like the whole world, especially in the community of swimming, has been completely, we've done a 180. You're exactly right by saying, Title IX, it's the 50th anniversary this year. So, but it was a fight long before that. And so, the past century, women have been working so hard, fighting relentlessly to get to the point where it's just equal opportunities. And to now we're infiltrating men back into a category that was created to be protected. It's a total 180. It's a slap in the face is what it is.
Now, where do you think the sports organizations like the NCAA are getting this idea that we should have such radical changes in how things are done in the world of sports? And then even, and we'll talk about this more in a moment, the Biden administration, government officials saying we are going to change laws and rules and how they're implemented to accommodate this new ideology.
Right. The media clearly pushes this left agenda. Like you said, it's the minority here. I would say, I'm not a scientist, I don't know the exact statistic, but let's say transgender people make up 0.5%. I think that's a fair assumption. You know, there are 50%, let's say, females. So we're turning our back on 50% of the world's population to protect 0.5%. It just doesn't make sense. But that 0.5% is the loudest. It's the minority. But it's the 0.5% that's being outspoken. And the media and organizations like Title IX, I mean, like the NCAA, like FIFA, all these places, they're catering to that.
Riley Gaines, as an all-time 12-time All-American swimmer, you have exerted so much time and effort training and competing and working diligently, as do your peers, whether that is at the University of Kentucky or over at the University of Pennsylvania. So when you have Leah Thomas get nominated as the Woman of the Year instead of all the other biological women who compete on behalf of the University of Pennsylvania, whether that is in swimming or other sports, what message does that send to those young women who are just passed by despite all the work and effort that they have to do, especially compared to somebody who's got traits of a biological male?
Right. It tells them their lifelong dedication to their sport, which is what this is at this level, is completely meaningless. It sets a terrible tone for younger athletes who, you know, are working to get to this point when we're celebrating and praising someone who spent 95% of their life as a male. They're getting the Woman of the Year. So it really undermines everything that these poor athletes have done for their sport, for their university. And so we're celebrating that now. And it's absolutely crazy to me that we've gotten to that point.
One of the things that the Biden administration is doing at this juncture is rewriting Title IX, looking at how they interpret sex to being beyond that idea of, okay, we want to protect women, for example, and we are going to expand that definition, and we're going to bring in transgender people, which then has implications for sports, etc. Talk to us about what's going on there with Title IX.
Right. So the Biden administration has basically rewritten Title IX to where they've redefined sex as gender identity. And so what that means is you can compete with whatever gender you identify. And so, like you said, we're infiltrating this back in to something that was intended to protect a group of people that needed protecting from men. It's been done very discreetly. And it's just abysmal. It's crazy.
Have you talked with your peers who have competed in swimming, who have been, say, in the locker room or in the situation where they're around Leah Thomas? Because to me, that's one thing that makes me just feel uncomfortable for young women just in general. In that, particularly in that environment where you have vulnerabilities and so forth, have you spoken with anybody in that situation? What's your impression in that regard?
Yes, of course. I've talked to numerous people across numerous different teams within the NCAA about this specifically. And it's so uncomfortable. You know, as women, we should have the right to not be forced to, one, undress in front of men, and two, have to be in a space where we see naked men. You know, a couple years ago, this would have been sexual assault. And now we've completely strayed from that. And it's now actually under the new Title IX. It is now sexual assault to refer to a transgender by the wrong pronouns. So we've gotten to a place in this country where, even despite all of the confusion regarding pronouns, how unnatural that is, if you were, say I were to call Leah Thomas a he, you could be, you know, fined and face a federal crime for that, but not because a male is changing completely naked in a locker room. And I think it's worth noting this is a male that still has sexual attraction to females.
Well, I mean, I'm almost at a loss for words here, because when you're redefining sexual harassment, I think that's particularly what you mean. Sexual harassment in some of these ways, and sexual assault, depending on the circumstance and what's happening, so that you can achieve some sort of an ideological objective, because that's what they're doing here more than anything. That is stunning to me. But when you're putting young women especially in this kind of position where you are vulnerable, you're in the locker room, you're changing, you're in that environment, and not, and you add that on top of the fact that you are competing against somebody who brings traits of a biological male into the competition. I just don't understand how we've gone, Riley Gaines, from let's advance women and really help you to be able to experience these sports opportunities and other opportunities that men have, to we're now going to change things and make women uncomfortable in order to achieve whatever that objective is.
Right, right. And that's what this is. That's exactly what this is.
One thing that's, I think, important is pushing back against this narrative and against the policies that are increasingly being initiated. And I want to spend a moment talking about my friend Eli Bremmer's new PAC 9 PAC, which is endorsing and supporting candidates that specifically want to preserve Title IX as intended to advance women's rights. In fact, 9 PAC, and I'll be putting out a tweet at Sang Center on Twitter, Sang with an E, not an A, Center on Twitter, about this event next Saturday, August 13th. 9 PAC will be hosting a big event at 6:30 to kick off this incredible effort to make sure that candidates are elected who support Title IX in the way it was intended, which is to advance the interests of women. And I bring this up in part because you are the special guest speaker at this event. So talk to me for a moment about that, and also about why it is important, in your view, to support candidates who want to advance women's rights rather than detract them.
Right. I'm super excited. It finally feels like there's someone stepping up to protect us and to speak up for us, because being 22 and a lot of girls, you know, younger than I, who have to deal with this, we don't know what to do. We don't know who to talk to. And so to finally have someone who is willing to stand up for us, it's just incredible. And I'm thrilled for the opportunity. I really am. But this is important to me because now, being in this position, I've realized what it's taken to get Title IX to where it was. I've met so many amazing female athletes who really did have to fight for this. And I think people think, you know, this was a long time ago, but it wasn't that long ago that it wasn't the way it used to be. And so I'm giving myself a voice. I'm giving my teammates who are threatened, who are intimidated, who are told they won't get a job, they'll lose their scholarships, I'm giving them a voice. I'm giving a voice to these young athletes who don't necessarily understand the implications of this if it continues the way it is.
Yeah, actually, to that point about young athletes, we see a generation that is coming up in our K through 12 schools who are being indoctrinated, whatever term you want to use, but they are increasingly adopting this idea that, you know, it's perfectly fine for, at least they seem to be adopting this idea that it is perfectly fine to make these sorts of changes and to welcome in various forums transgender athletes to or in other situations to impede on those spaces that have been specifically intended for girls or for men, even if you were to flip the coin onto the other side. What would you say, or what do you say to young people who are like, no, this is actually something that we should be doing as a society?
I think, you know, they have been taught to think that this is okay, whether that be in schools, you know, TV, media, they're pushing this. So I feel like there is some confusion within the younger generation. And I think that's exactly what people are trying to do, because they know older people, your generation, my generation, we have common sense, and we can see how this is, you know, something that's not okay, something that is regressive, not progressive. But these younger kids, they don't understand. And so my thought to them is, I want them to, you know, kind of step back and realize what's happening, because so many opportunities will be lost across all aspects, not even just sports, if this is something that continues and if this is something that is continued to be celebrated.
Yeah, I think that's very important. And having young women such as yourself, all of 22 years old, just graduated from college, and congratulations on that. I think it's absolutely critical that you and others or messengers, listener texting in, Jimmy, please tell Riley that we are so proud of her and support her. What can we do to help women in athletics to fight for their rights? That's a question for you from this listener, Riley. What can we do?
My advice is use your voice. Like I mentioned earlier, the media is portraying it that you're crazy if you think this, but I will say since speaking out in March about this, I have gotten so much support. I really haven't received backlash, which is something I'm fortunate for. But they want you to think that if you do speak up, you will receive hate. You will not get a job. It's been completely the opposite for myself. I've received job opportunities, all kinds of amazing things. And so I want to reiterate that, one. Two, it doesn't matter if you're a female. It doesn't matter if you're an athlete. It doesn't matter your age, your gender, your sex, your race, you know, speak out about this. You don't have to have some sort of personal experience to make your argument valid. And so I want people to realize that this is something that needs to be handled with volume. The more voices that are heard, the more people will realize, you know, you're not alone in thinking that this is absolute nonsense like the media wants you to.
I think that's so well put. And another way to help is through organizations like Nine Pack having its kickoff event next Saturday. I'll tweet out the link, but if you're interested in going for more information, you can email info@ninepack.org. That's the number 9 spelled out, ninepack.org. And again, I'll put out the tweet so you can see all the details here and get tickets if you'd like next Saturday. Eli and Cammie Bremer putting this on, and Eric Odlin, Jennifer Ruth Green, Barb Kirkmeyer, and Steve Monahan, all candidates for Congress, will be there. And so I think it's so important to take this stand. And Riley Gaines, you are extraordinarily impressive. Thank you for speaking up and speaking out, giving voice on this important issue. And we'll definitely keep in touch and have you back on.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I look forward to being in Colorado. And I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity. So thank you.
It'll be great. Great time. I will be there, and it will be great to meet you, Riley, again. Riley Gaines joining us on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back on the other side. News Talk 710 KNUS. Welcome back, Jimmy Sengenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS, which is proud to present our second annual Cigar Night with host Dennis Prager. It will be an evening of great conversation with like-minded people on Thursday night, September 1st, at the View House in Centennial. Your ticket will include hors d'oeuvres, a carving station, first beverage, one of Dennis's books, and premium cigars. Seating is limited. Get tickets and complete details at 710knus.com. And we're also proud to present the Denver premiere of Larry Elder's newest movie, Uncle Tom 2, the follow-up to his insightful hit movie, Uncle Tom. This is a free screening event for 710KNUS listeners, so join us on Monday, August 22nd at 6 p.m. at the Regal South Glen 14 Theaters in Centennial, VIP meet and greet, followed by a screening of the film and Q&A session following the show. It's a free event, but seating is limited. You must register for tickets while they last at 710knus.com. Eric Odland is in studio, candidate for CD7. We'll bring him on for the full hour in the next hour. News Talk 710KNUS, Jimmy Sengenberger Show.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.